Weeks passed. Before I knew it, we had crossed the entire Atlantic Ocean, and Tierra del Fuego loomed before us. Romantically named, yes, but there were no fires visible. Instead, we were overshadowed by pitch-black cliffs rising to more distant mountains. The sun and the moon struggled equally to reach us. On we sailed regardless, westward, until one mid-afternoon we broke free from land and were on the open ocean again. But this time it was the Pacific, characterized, I thought, by a more golden hue of sunlight shimmering upon it. By then we were 2 months at sea. We were still without a public agenda or purpose, a puzzle to all of us, until one day, at the noon hour, the captain called another meeting of all hands to announce that we were at the latitude of Valparaiso in Chile and would soon change course for the Orient. The Orient? We looked at each other. The more experienced sailors whispered that if that were the case, we had been misled. Obviously, we were bound for the opium trade. What else would we be good for, they wondered, for we were bristling with weaponry and our holds were full of powder and cannonballs. We were eminently unsuitable for the transport of Chinese silk or porcelain, or fish from Kamchatka. "Surely it is the poppy for us," they said, "either guarding it from marauders or stealing it for ourselves." Our captain, sensing the general concern, denied it. "Preposterous," he said, stroking his beard. But whatever the truth was of our mission, we soon altered course for the west. For a week, we continued to revel in favourable winds. Luck, however, could only last for so long. One morning, we saw our sails empty in a minute, as though all moving air had been sucked from them. A similar torpor infected the sea, becalming it. That listlessness spread quickly to the crew, older sailors spitting overboard to demonstrate our stasis, saying they would never have signed to the John Roberts had they known the doldrums awaited. When I asked for the meaning of the doldrums, I was told that it was a windless desert from which we would leave changed, and not for the better. I marked that first day of lassitude into my calendar, so I knew that it was 3 days later, on December the 30th, 1851, at 3 in the afternoon, that through the surrounding mist crept a vision we could scarcely believe, a 3-masted vessel with rigging in disarray, sheets falling to the water, utterly abandoned by humankind, but encrusted extraordinarily by thousands of tiny green birds. Puzzled, galvanized by curiosity, we gathered with telescopes in hand and looked across the intervening sea. Mist rose wraith-like on all sides. Our captain, summoned from his cabin, ventured his opinion that the birds were hummingbirds, exhausted by migratory effort, taking refuge upon that ghostly bark to rest their wings. He had seen them often in the Americas, and how strange it was, he added, for they were very far from their usual passage, and they looked a sorry lot. Next, he ordered, for a cheerful pastime, that we shoot our cannon directly at them to assess their vitality. Our first officer, Mr. Stevens, suggested, with due respect, that such a proposal smacked of cruelty, that sending the tender across with a crew of 6 would serve the same purpose. But the captain scoffed, saying they were birds, they lacked complex feelings. To see them jump to the air would be a spectacle well worth the price of a scoop of powder. By then the second officer had begun the process of raising the most proximate cannon into battle-ready position. He gave orders to load, and so the sailors did, prodding the explosive deep into the maw of the beast, so to speak, and after the signal for readiness was given, the captain gave his order and the fuse was lit, and ball and grapeshot roared across the intervening water, ruffling the surface by the force of their passing, grazing the bow of the target vessel. Immediately the birds came to life. They rose, startled, like ornate cloudlets of red and green particles, iridescent, muted somewhat by the haze born of smoke from the cannonade and from a humid sweat rising from the sea itself.